Blog Talk Radio.
America is a land of heroes, a place where greatness is born, where destinies are forged, and where legends come to life. This is the home of Thomas Edison and Teddy Roosevelt, of many great generals, including Washington, Pershing, Patton, and MacArthur. This is the home of Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, Amelia Earhart, Harriet Tubman, the Wright brothers, Neil Armstrong, and so many more. This is the country where children learn names like Wyatt Earp, Davy Crockett, and Annie Oakley. This is the place where the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth and where Texas Patriots made their last stand at the Alamo. The American nation was carved out of the vast frontier by the toughest, strongest, fiercest, and most determined men and women ever to walk on the face of the earth. Our ancestors braved the unknown, tamed the wilderness, settled the Wild West, lifted millions from poverty, disease, and hunger, vanquished tyranny and fascism, ushered the world to new heights of science and medicine, laid down the railroads, dug out the canals, raised up the skyscrapers. Our ancestors built the most exceptional republic ever to exist in all of human history, and we are making it greater than ever before. This is our glorious and magnificent inheritance. We are Americans. We are pioneers. We are the pathfinders. We settled the new world. We built the modern world, and we change history forever by embracing the eternal truth that everyone is made equal by the hand of Almighty God. America is the place where anything can happen. America is the place where anyone can rise. And here, on this land, on this soil, on this continent, the most incredible dreams come true. This nation is our canvas, and this country is our masterpiece. We look at tomorrow and see unlimited frontiers just waiting to be explored. Our brightest discoveries are not yet known. Our most thrilling stories are not yet told. Our grandest journeys are not yet made. The American age, the American epic, the American adventure has only just begun. Our spirit is still young. The sun is still rising. God's grace is still shining. And my fellow Americans, the best is yet to come.
Absolutely. Yo, guys, that's well, first off, James Bostic here with Conservative's Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Tuesdays, Thursdays, live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded version of the program that goes out on Mojo50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you ought to be. The very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there. And ACP is a part of that picture, and we're really proud and humbled by that. What you just heard there, that's from the 2020 campaign, and that's called Best Is Yet to Come. And somebody tell me, what are the Democrats saying? Well, first off, somebody tell me what the Democrats are saying anyway, because I don't understand anything about what those crazy sons of bitches are thinking. But somebody tell me, and we'll just narrow it down, make it a little simpler. What are the Democrats saying that sounds anything close to what the president is saying? Anybody. Anyone at all? Well, yeah, it's kind of a rhetorical question. You can't, because in order to say the things that the president says, one would have to love this country. One would have to see this country the way that Donald Trump and you and I see this country. They don't do that. They don't do that. They haven't done that in a long, long time. He is not, in many instances, the most articulate guy out there. So what? Neither am I. Who cares? But if you are effective at communicating your message, if you are effective at telling the story, how articulate do you have to be? Now, there are others who may disagree, and they're totally free to do that. But there's no doubt in my mind that Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America, believes in his heart with everything he has, every word you just heard him say. I really do believe that. And when you take that sincerity, and that's what it is, okay? You love it, you hate it. It's sincere. Bernie Sanders, another good example of that. You love him, you hate him, okay? He's sincere. And it's one of the reasons, believe it or not, that he's resonating so well the Democrat voters. I don't know what the DNC is going to do about this. That I'm not exactly sure how this is going to happen. Most of the people out there say that the DNC are not going to let Bernie get the nomination. They're just not going to let him do it. Some say, yeah, it's going to be tough for him to be denied that if he continues on this path. And if he does well in South Carolina and he kind of leaves Warren, and I'm digressing here for just a moment, he leaves Warren and Biden behind, then, you know, he's not going to have a whole lot of problem declaring himself the presumptive nominee. Now, that doesn't mean they don't go to the convention and it's a brokered convention and pow! From out of nowhere comes Hillary Clinton and Michelle Obama on the ticket. I mean, who knows with these crazy-ass Democrats? And don't tell me that it's that far-fetched. Look at all the crazy crap that's happened in the last 3 years. If I'd have told you all this stuff was going to happen, would you have believed me? No, you'd say that's just crazy. That's just insane. But here we are. What was I talking about? That happens every now and then. It's been a long week, people, and I'm a little tired. But anyway, give me a minute here. I knew when I took off on that tangent that this was prone to happen. Oh, well, we'll just keep on going with this one. We'll just take the ball and run in this direction. Back to the present. You know, it's real to him. These things that he says. I've got another one of these here. It's called Four More Years. I've played it before. This is the newest one, and it's awesome. But it's his sincerity. Like I said, he believes this. When he reads this stuff, the reason it is so believable is not because he is a terrific actor. No, it's because he believes it. Now, when you take that sincerity and you couple it with the finely tuned and acutely honed talent that is concomitant with being the most successful reality television producer in the history of the medium, and I promise you, no one understands a story arc like Donald Trump. And we're starting to see some parts of this unfold. Now, granted, are all these things of Donald Trump's doing, all these setbacks, is he that great a mastermind? No, he's not. But the thing of it is, he understands intuitively how to work these situations to the country's advantage, thereby our advantage. There's a lot of great people out there that are doing, you know, stuff. Matter of fact, tonight we're gonna have the Starlight Spotlight on Devin Nunes. I got a couple of clips with him that are both about 9-10 minutes each, but they're pretty revealing of some of the things that are going on. And we're gonna get to that in a minute. But this is the new one. The best is yet to come. And it's some inspiring stuff from the president. And like I said, this is where he beats the Democrats. He beats the Never Trumpers. He beats everybody that gets out there and tries to knock the guy. What he said in that, in the best is yet to come, this is what he sees for the country. This is what he genuinely believes about the United States, its exceptionalism, its still vast untapped potential. And what does he want to do? He wants to bring it out. He wants to cultivate it. He wants to let that grow. He wants to let that success grow. Where are the Democrats that are on board with this novel idea? Where are they? Are they the ones from the State of the Union address? The majority. There were a couple of brave ones. There were a couple of brave ones there in the back, but you know, most of them was classless, nattering nabobs of negativity. They sat on their hands. And like we talked, all those things that the president talked about in the State of the Union, those weren't partisan ideals. Those weren't partisan success stories. That didn't have anything on earth to do with being a Democrat or being a Republican. All those stories represent the American ideal. That's all. And the Democrats were not on board with that. The State of the Union speech itself, a celebration of the American ideal. And the American ideal is not Democrat, it's not Republican, it's not Libertarian, it's not. And that is a remarkably disconcerting thing. And it should be a very disconcerting thing to anybody that truly loves this country and understands the importance of adhering to the Constitution in its originalist intent. I'm not going to get anywhere near that because I am nowhere near versed enough to do it. I barely understand the amendments, but I'm moving along with it, and I look at it on a regular basis. And you know what? Would it kill any of us too? Seriously? I mean, through the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Declaration of Independence, 10-minute read. So, 10-minute read. The Constitution, a little more involved, doesn't take much longer to read it, but in terms of its understanding, because you want to learn how to run this country? You want to have it fine-tuned to its optimum potential? Look at the originalist intent of the Constitution. And if it is cool with the Constitution, all right, we can do it. If it's not cool with the Constitution, no, we're not going to do it. But we want to change the Constitution. Okay, that's great. We can do that. We have provisions within the Constitution that tell us how to amend it. But appointing ideologically partisan judges who legislate from the bench, we got a problem. We just can't do it that way. That's not how it's supposed to be. And again, if you go the way it's supposed to be, we're eliminating a boatload of problems in this country. And I believe it is incumbent upon us, you know, if we really want to be good citizens, we need to understand our founding documents. We need to understand them. We need to know how they work. We need to familiarize ourselves with our governing process. A lot of people don't. They just don't. There's beer gardens and there's rock concerts and there's national government radio and there's loving the environment and then bragging about buying a Jeep. I mean, there's a lot of things that are important here, man. And, you know, the Constitution's been around for a long time. It can wait a little bit longer before I look at it. It hadn't changed much since they wrote it, I'm sure. And that's the attitude a lot of people take. For a long time, myself included, I can't lie about it. I am dry as dust. I don't know what the deal is there. But anyway, no Democrat. And I don't care how much of a horse race And I suppose, you know, it is to the news geeks like me. But, I mean, I'm not even moved by it. These people aren't polling. They're not polling. They're not polling well with Democrat voters. Not polling, you know, non-existent with anybody else. They're not polling well with Democrat voters. Democrat voter turnout is unbelievably suppressed. Yeah, that's one of the things with the Iowa caucus, and then with what's going on up here. The New Hampshire's the one they just had, and everybody's rolling down South Carolina. People aren't interested. They're screaming about youth vote and how Bernie Sanders has captivated a lot of the youth voter base in the Democrat Party, and maybe he has. But Democrat voter numbers overall are low. They're lackluster. And, you know, this is a Democrat Party that we've been hearing about practically since Donald Trump took his hand off the Bible after being sworn in and saying that their voter base was angry and energized and ready to rock and roll in terms of taking the great golden groundhog out. He's not the bad orange man. No. He's the great golden groundhog. And when he came out on February 2nd, all these swamp dwellers were cringing in his shadow and they started running for the exits. And that's some of what we're going to talk about at some point tonight. Just depending on when these random neural firings take us there. But again, no Democrat says what the president says. No Democrat is interested in saying the things that the president says, because no Democrat holds in his heart the love for this country that the president has. In the other one there, there's another one of these. The one I played before, Four More Years, which is a good one too. It's great. But there's a tagline in there. You know, for years, for decades, you guys have been faithful to your government. Well, now you have a president that's faithful to you. Is he as eloquent as Bill Clinton? Nah. Is he as articulate as Barack Obama? No, probably not. He's not a finesse guy. That much we know. But I think it's like this. If the president says it, if Donald Trump says it, then by damn, you could probably pretty much hang your hat on it. It's that solid. Think about Bill Clinton. Think about George W. Bush. Think about Barack Obama. How many things did they say that you really you knew were solid? Exactly. Well, I guess probably better get on with it here a little bit. Recently, a woman by the name of Jessie Liu was nominated to the Treasury Department as Deputy Secretary for Counterintelligence and Terrorism. Maybe you've heard about her. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you've heard about her in the news in so much as that you heard that the nomination for Jessie Liu to this post had been withdrawn. Well, here's why. Lou Dobbs, a great bid, Fox Business News. Terrific outfit, and they've got some really good people. Lou Dobbs for one, Maria Bartiromo for another one. Where you at, Dobby? Come on, babe. And he lays it out about Jesse Liu, and he lays it out in such great detail in a very short time, because this clip is only like 3 minutes long. That enough questions were raised to prompt this nomination to be withdrawn, and here to tell you all about it, Lou Dobbs. As soon as I hit the play button.
A confirmation hearing this week in the Senate for a little-known U.S. attorney. It may provide some revealing information about what may be another deep state cover-up. This coming Thursday, the former U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, Jesse Liu, will sit before the Senate Banking Committee to become the Treasury Department's Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Crimes. During her time as D.C.'s top attorney, Liu helped a man by the name of James Wolf get away with leaking classified information and ultimately lying to the FBI. Wolf was the former security director of the Senate Intelligence Committee. He was indicted in 2018 for leaking information to four journalists, including one with whom he was having an affair. As I said, he also lied to the FBI. And according to his indictment, Wolf picked up a highly classified document on the 17th of March to take to the Senate Intel Committee. A later FBI sentencing recommendation confirms that that document contained the first two FISA warrants for Carter Page and was the foundation of accelerated Spygate. Also on March 17th, Democratic Senator, Intel Committee Vice Chairman, Senator Mike Warren, texted Christopher Steele's attorney, Adam Waldman, that he was, quote, going into the skiff. What did they talk about? March 17th is also the date stamped on the release FISA warrants that allowed the spying to begin on Carter Page. And from that, it is fair to say that James Wolf took custody of the Carter Page FISA applications, delivered them to the skiff where they were reviewed by Senator Warner, and then leaked to the press by James Wolf. So what happened to James Wolf? He was never charged with leaking classified information. Politico reports during the lame duck session after the 2018 midterm, Senators Warner, Richard Burr, and Dianne Feinstein asked for leniency in his case. And that's where Jesse Liu comes back into the case. She dropped most of the charges against Wolf. She allowed him to plead guilty to one count, only one count of lying to investigators. Wolf served exactly 2 months in prison. So, questions that every senator on the banking committee might be considering. Did the Department of Justice or the FBI have evidence that James Wolf leaked the Carter Page FISA application? If so, why wasn't he prosecuted? And is Liu trying to cover up? Did she help cover up the Wolf case? Remember, 2 months in prison.
Now, when you take a look at that, okay, the guy lied to investigators, which, you know, a lot of times that happens. And let's look at that as opposed to the sentencing for Roger Stone. And, you know, you guys remember Roger Stone, kind of an unofficial Trump surrogate. He was convicted on some procedural stuff in this lynch mob that was trying to get the president. And he was found guilty of lying to Congress. 7 to 9 years. That's what the DOJ justices, these politically focused hacks in the Department of Justice, they give James Wolf 60 days. Roger Stone, 7 to 9 years. America. There are murderers and rapists, horrible, evil people that don't get put away for 7 to 9 years for what they do. Cover up? Yeah. Again, you know, we said we had Devin Nunes. I got some really good Devin Nunes clips And we're going to go ahead and grab that. I have one, this with his reaction to the news, where, you know, all this stuff has come to light, and it looks like, you know, we were almost on the cusp of nominating a Hydra operative to an extremely sensitive position in the Treasury Department. And, well, we can't have that. And thanks to Lou Dobbs, doesn't look like we're going to. Here's Devin Nunes, and I think he's with maybe Maria Bartiromo. This is his reaction to finding out about the withdrawal of Jesse Liu's name for the undersecretary position in the Treasury Department.
Next guest tonight is one of the president's staunchest defenders in Congress. He's also recently called for the removal of all Obama holdovers at the National Security Council. Joining us tonight is Congressman Devin Nunes, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, member of the House Ways and Means Committee as well. Congressman, great to have you with us. And
great to be on with you, Lou. Thank you so much for everything you've done.
Well, I appreciate it. And I can definitely say the country owes you greatly, and thanks for all that you do for the country day in and day out. Let me start with the National Security Advisor. Obviously, has begun trimming down the National Security Council from, what was it, more than 200 employees.
Yeah, so let me say too, Lou, before we get going, I just heard, and I don't want to, normally you're the one that's breaking news, but talking about Lou, who's just been nominated, right, or has been nominated and is supposed to talk to the Senate, I am hearing now that the president has actually pulled that nomination, so that would be good news. Maybe the president was watching and he just decided to do it on a whim. He was watching you or something.
Well, the fact is, I would certainly, I just can't imagine it would have been advanced at all because of her background. Can you?
But you're right that the questions that the senators could have asked would have been wonderful if they would have actually, you know, followed through and actually were tough and ask the tough questions. But, yeah, I think the president has pulled that nomination just here in the breaking in the last few minutes.
Well, that's wonderful, and we appreciate you sharing it here tonight. And I'm sure right now as I'm speaking, we've got people all over the phones trying to talk to the administration about what is transpiring there, mm-hmm, particularly the Treasury Secretary. Let's turn to the what would you call it, downsizing or right-sizing, perhaps, the National Security Council that Robert O'Brien has undertaken.
Let's call it that.
So roughly, you know, there were like roughly 500 people total in there. Around 250, about half of those were political appointees or so-called policy people. The way I understand it now is finally, with this new National Security Advisor, O'Brien, he's got that number down to about 100. And I think that's a good sign. But I also think he needs to look at the other people that were there that are kind of the permanent bureaucracy,
right,
that are there. Because, look, there's just been way too many leaks. And one of the things that I've been saying is until you stop the leaks, you just got to get those people as far away from the White House as possible. Just move them out. You know, I'm not saying you got to fire them, but just get them the heck away from the president, because that place leaks like a sieve. And I mean, look, massive leaks. I mean, the leak of, and I'm not saying it came from there. I don't have any evidence that it came from the National Security Council. But look.
Well, I should say, if I may interrupt you, Congressman, that many people say that the primary source of all of the leaks in this administration for the past 3 years has originated in the National Security Council.
I believe that. I absolutely believe that. That would be the logical place for it. We knew there were a bunch of Obama holdovers in there. I mean, you know the story about how people that were on that team then end up on the House Democrats, Adam Schiff's committee, that end up being part of this impeachment hoax. So there's a whole lot there that we really need to get to the bottom of, and that's why I've said, look, just get them out, quarantine them, because it's putting this presidency in danger. And I think the president now understands that. And I was hoping that John Bolton would have cleaned house. He didn't, but now that O'Brien is, I think it's going to be a big improvement.
Absolutely. Let's turn to the Attorney General for just a moment, because he is making some important statements as he often does, but acknowledging that the Justice Department has created an intake process for Rudy Giuliani's information on the Ukrainian relationships with the Bidens and the charges there. He says also that he is doing precisely the same thing, offering it up to anyone who has information to come forward. Your thoughts about the Attorney General and what he is doing?
Well, first and foremost, this is not news, okay? Mm-hmm. The mainstream media is trying to make a big deal about this because they have never wanted to investigate this.
Right.
But what is the truth? The truth is the Department of Justice, just by its name, it's the Department of Justice. In order to have justice, you have to make sure the people who are citizens of this country have a way to come forward and bring the Department of Justice information. Okay, so this is not a big deal. Now, remember, this is information that we've been looking for, House Republicans have been looking for a long time.
Right.
Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal attorney, who was looking at Ukraine, we were looking at Ukraine, and lo and behold, we were trying to figure out where did this black ledger come from that was used to dirty up the Trump campaign?
Right.
Why did the Ukrainian ambassador in Washington, D.C. say nasty things, a diplomat of all people, say nasty things about candidate Trump at the time? These are questions that need to be answered. And so I think what Attorney General Barr said was just the obvious, which is, we're the Department of Justice. We take this information in. That's what they're there for. That's what they get paid to do.
They're paid to do so much that they haven't done, though, Congressman, as you well know.
They've done things that aren't so that we need to investigated for,
or
and are being investigated for.
That aren't legal as well.
Yes, that's also true.
At this point, stand without accountability. Will change.
You know, Lou, can I say something too about we started with James? You talked about James Wolfe. Okay,
right.
So if you look at James Wolfe. Here's a guy who leaked classified information, as you started out with at the beginning of this segment.
Right.
He was sleeping with a reporter and leaking classified information. He ends up lying to the FBI, okay, and so he gets a couple months in prison. And now you have Roger Stone, who was investigated on what is now a total witch
hunt. Hey, I just talked about that.
The FISA warrant, that whole process, we knew.
And our viewers are looking at a picture of James Wolfe, the former director of security for the Senate Intelligence Committee.
So think about this. This guy gets a couple months. And look, he should have got a lot more than that, all right? But then today, so Roger Stone, who should have never been investigated in the first place because the dirty cops knew in January of 17, this is months before Mueller, that there was no collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign. So this was a bogus investigation from the beginning. So Roger Stone gets drugged through the mud, okay? He gets busted for what? He gets busted for lying to Congress, okay? And if you remember, the Democrats on that committee were doing everything they could to trip him up. Now, look, it's not okay to lie to Congress. It definitely is a problem. It's definitely illegal.
Well, apparently it's not terrible because James Wolfe only got 2 months.
Well, Wolfe gets 2 months for
leaking. And, of course, Roger Stone gets 7 to 9 years.
Exactly. I just wanted to make sure you understood that tonight with the correlation between Wolfe and Roger Stone.
I understand.
This makes no sense.
And there's a correlation with General Flynn, whose sentencing has been by Judge Emmett Sullivan has been delayed indefinitely. For what reason? Because the Justice Department, again, wants to hang him high. There is something terribly wrong in that Justice Department that this is happening.
The president is right.
It's just outrageous.
Let me tell you something else that your viewers will be interested in. You'll be interested because there's more to come on this. The lawyers that stepped aside today, that busted Rod, that made this 7 to 9 year recommendation on the prosecutors, we believe that this is not going to be the only example. We think there's other examples of things that they did during the Mueller investigation that I think you and your listeners and the American people will be very interested to learn in the coming weeks as we start to unpeel the onion of what the Mueller team was really doing. Because I always say this, when Mueller was appointed,
we have to ask
ourselves, he walks in the door the first day and said, okay, show me all the evidence you got on the Russians. They're like, Bob, sorry, we don't have any Russians here. We don't have any evidence.
Yeah.
So what the hell did they do for 2 years? They set up an obstruction of justice trap, and they went out after a whole bunch of people that now got sentenced. Some already served their time, and I think all of this has to come into question now at this point.
Good for you, Congressman, and I couldn't agree with you more. And I hope that you will be with us throughout the next few weeks as this does, as you say, unfold.
Thank you, Lou.
And again, thanks for all you've done and continue to do.
See, think about how vast and just how fundamentally all-encompassing just about this thing is. All these people, there was no collusion. There wasn't any collusion. There wasn't any wrongdoing. But these guys got put in jail. And Nunes is right. You shouldn't lie to Congress, okay? But what we're looking at here is the sentencing disparity. 60 days. Dude lied to the FBI. James Wolf lied to the FBI. Roger Stone lied to Congress. Lie is a lie. I get that. And maybe he should go to jail for 60 days. Maybe he should be sentenced to home confinement and community service. Oh, and, of course, you know, they bring up Rudy Giuliani, and I've got a great clip of Rude Dog, which, yeah, we'll go ahead and play it before we take a break. This is from a couple of weeks ago. And as you know, Rudy Giuliani he's been busy over the last few months. He was in Eastern Europe there for a couple of months with Chanel Rion from One American News Network. And she put together a blockbuster expose on just the Ukraine facet of the Biden criminal enterprise syndicate, because that's about what it looks like. But it was just dealing specifically with the issue of Ukraine, Viktor Shokin, the prosecutor who was fired, Yuri Lutsenko, the prosecutor who replaced Shokin, Vladimir Zelensky, the man who replaced Petro Poroshenko as president. They did it all. And Giuliani was there interviewing all these principal people. And where are you? Where you at, man? Ah. Here it is, Giuliani, the Imperial, as Michael Cutler calls him. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Rudy Giuliani breaking his silence. You know, they've tried to minimize and invalidate Giuliani and what he's been doing over here, and they're doing that with good reason, and we're going to let Rudy tell you all about it.
The media spent much of the last week touting their new hero, the shady and indicted Ukrainian businessman Lev Parnas. Now, he's been leveling some serious accusations, not only at the president and other top officials,
but also
at Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani joins us now exclusively. Rudy, great to see you tonight. Well, your name was all over the news last week, thanks to your former whatever he is, Mr.
Client.
Parnas. Everyone in the media is waiting for your response. We really appreciate your joining us tonight. So first, I want you to listen to the remarks from Parnas.
Did anybody in the U.S. government or Mr. Giuliani actually convey to officials in Ukraine that you were there as a representative of President Trump?
The first thing I did is to introduce myself and tell him I'm here on behalf of Rudy Giuliani and the President of the United States. I wouldn't do anything without the consent of Rudy Giuliani or the President. I have no intent, I have no reason to speak to any of these officials. It was all about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and also Rudy had a personal thing with the Manafort stuff.
And he never testified.
Well, my response is that Lev is someone I was close to. Obviously, I was misled by him. I feel very bad. I was godfather to his child and Svetlana's child. I still feel sorry for him. I'm not going to respond to him for each and every one of the misrepresentations he's made, because there are so many. If I'm called as a witness, I'm prepared to do it. In fact, I wouldn't mind being called as a witness for a lot of reasons, including being able to reveal the unbelievable amount of corruption that went on between the Democratic Party and Ukraine all throughout the Obama administration. I think people would be astounded to know the hundreds of millions of dollars that illegally passed hands between Americans and Ukrainians.
I got it, Rudy, but nobody, everyone watching tonight is going to think, and I just know how it all plays out, as do you. You've been doing this for decades. They're all going to say, well, Rudy Giuliani will not respond to the allegation that the president was directing him to direct Parnas to do what he was doing in Ukraine to put the pressure on the Ukrainian government.
I will tell you that he, in very large part, did not tell the truth. I will give you a couple of examples that are public. I will not be sucked into a point-by-point response, which I am ready to give in great detail in front of Congress or a court, in which it will turn out that he lied multiple times. I'll give you one. He said that he was part of a meeting that he was called into during a Hanukkah party at the White House, and the president, and during that meeting, deputized him and told him that he was going to be like his representative. There were four people in that meeting. The four people in that meeting, myself, his former partner, Igor Fruman, and two others, say that it's absolutely untrue. The meeting never took place. The records demonstrate the meeting never took place.
So that would indicate that he wasn't being directed by the president through you.
No, it indicates that he lied.
What he was doing.
No. Well, it indicates that he lied, misrepresented it, like Michael Cohen did. Let me give you a second example. They put out a story that Congressman Nunes met with Viktor Shokin in Vienna in 2018, making it like a horrible thing that Devin Nunes did. Lev Parnas put out that story. Lev Parnas once again lied. Devin Nunes was not in Vienna at the time. His passport demonstrates that.
His videotapes demonstrate that.
But no, please let me finish because I have to answer it my way.
Shut up, Laura.
The second part of it is that I interviewed under oath Mr. Shokin. Mr. Shokin is prepared to show that he hadn't been in Vienna for 7 years, never talked to Devin Nunes, and that Mr. Parnas lied about him. Now, how many times do I have to prove a man is a liar before he isn't featured any longer as the main witness for all you people in the press? The man is a demonstrated liar.
Okay, so you've impeached
his credibility. I cannot go through every single one of the things that he said.
I can assure
you, as those two lies I just demonstrated, he didn't just lie. He lied stupidly.
What's his motivation?
You know what a stupid
lie
is? A stupid lie
he's under
is
indictment,
when your
Laura.
Partner, Igor Fruman, can contradict you. A stupid lie is when there's a tape recording that can contradict you. A stupid lie is when there's a passport that can contradict you. But I can't possibly go through all the lies that he told.
All right, Rudy, let's move on because this is the area that
what's his motivation?
His
motivation is not to go to prison. The same thing as Michael Cohen.
That's what I figured you were going to say. That's what our idea
is. Come on. What's his motivation?
All right, Rudy, the other big question.
Unfortunately, the man's character got tested.
Yeah. Well, he was
and
a pallier.
And he said,
I will
lie my way out. Am I disappointed? Yeah. I'm heartbroken.
Yeah, you must.
I'm heartbroken.
A personal betrayal of that caliber.
I am heartbroken. And the lies are not just lies. They're stupid lies. Which means he is extremely poorly represented. I don't let my client go in and tell a story that four people can contradict without checking it out.
All right, Rudy, I want to move on. Help me out. I want to move on. Let's move on to the other allegation, which was that you directed the surveillance of a sitting U.S. ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch, in Ukraine.
No, I did not. No, I can definitely tell you I didn't. In fact, she directed the surveillance of me, which nobody's investigating, and of Mr. Solomon. And of your colleague, Sean Hannity,
Donald Trump Jr. I'm on the list.
Oh, are you on the list?
Yeah,
Nobody's investigating that. Nobody's investigating Biden's bribery. Nobody's investigating the surveillance of a lawyer, of a newspaper reporter. Nobody is investigating the money laundering charge against Hunter Biden, which I have as a matter of record. Nobody's investigating the money that Biden's brother took out of Iraq the last time he was appointed, another $500 million. They don't investigate Democrats. They are afraid.
No, they
They're
don't.
Afraid of what the media will do to them. Instead, they take chicken, charges, and they exaggerate them against Republicans. It is so disgusting, the double standard. So disgusting.
I've got a big surprise coming up.
I'm going to devote a lot of my time this year exposing the double standard on my own podcast.
Oh, fun.
I'll do it with records, recordings, tape recordings, financial records. A lot of people were pulling a lot of money out of Ukraine, and I learned a lot more about Ukraine than I did just the millions that Joe Biden stole there.
And the millions
that he stole in Iraq, and the millions that he stole in China, and it is a disgrace that he's not under investigation.
Speaking of Bill Barr, he could be doing a lot of these investigations. Parnas is saying that Barr was aware
of all of your statement.
Hold on, let me play it. Well, a lot of people don't know what I'm talking about.
This one I can answer definitively for you.
Okay, let's just play it, and then you can react. Watch.
Do you know if Mr. Giuliani was ever in contact with Mr. Barr specifically about the fact that he was trying to get Ukraine to announce these investigations into Joe Biden?
Oh, absolutely.
Mr. Barr knew about that.
Mr. Barr had to have known everything. I mean, it's impossible.
Parnas also sent a letter to A.G. Barr arguing, given the totality of the circumstances, we believe it's appropriate for you to recuse yourself from the ongoing investigation and pending prosecution of Mr. Parnas. Rudy, was the attorney general in on whatever was going on there in the Ukraine?
I have never spoken to Attorney General Barr about this investigation, ever. Not one word to Attorney General Barr about this investigation. Not even a congratulations on how well he's handling it. I have been circumspect, careful, exceedingly careful. Not only that, Parnas knows that. I told Parnas several times that I would make sure I would never go to the Attorney General with it so I wouldn't compromise him. That is a flat-out, absolute, despicable lie. I am very disappointed and hurt by him, but that one really is a shame, to try to implicate somebody who had nothing to do with it. I'll tell you this definitively, never spoke to Attorney General Barr about this investigation, never once.
Rudy.
Okay. It goes on for a few more seconds, but that's the important thing right there. Do any of you guys know, does that name, Lev Parnas, ring a bell? Because right there in the week before the impeachment, He was their star. He was their smoking gun. He was their dude. He was their Christine Blasey Ford. Yeah. And we don't even know who the hell he is. Okay, well, this lasted for about 2 days. This Lev Parnas thing. I had stuff on him. He was in the feed, man, and we were going to talk about it, but we didn't have time, and there were bigger stories. And boom, just as quickly as he emerged on the impeachment horizon, he exited stage left. Bang, it's gone. What was his motivation? Just like he said, didn't want to go to prison. He was under indictment for some kind of money laundering scheme involving campaign donations. I'm not exactly sure beyond that, but you know, he was looking at a lot of time, just like Michael Cohen was looking at a lot of time, and they thought they could come up with something that was going to save their hides. And you know, Parnas didn't make it. He's probably sitting around home confinement right now waiting to be sentenced. And none of the stuff that he did worked to help him at all. None of it. And that's good. That's good. Okay. Well, I think we're going to take a little bit of a break, and we will be back. Let's see. Yeah, we'll be back. We got a few more things to talk about. We're not going to go the whole 2 hours. I'm going to knock out early tonight. I'm kind of tired. But we do have some more things to talk about, and we will about that much be committed. That was Al Sharpton. Anyway, we will be back with more of Conservative's Perspective right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network after this brief musical interlude.
I'm gonna buy a paper doll that I can call my own. A doll that other fellows cannot steal. And then the flirty, flirty guys with their flirty, flirty eyes will have to flirt with dollies that are real. When I come home at night, she will be waiting. She'll be the truest doll in all this world. I'd rather have a paper doll to call my own than have a fickle-minded real-life girl. I guess I had a million dolls or more. I guess I've played the dog game for and all. I just quarreled with Sue. That's why I'm blue. She's gone away and left me just like all dolls do. I'll tell you boys, it's tough to be alone. And it's tough to love a doll that's not your own. I'm through with all of them. I'll never fall again. Say, boy, what you gonna do? I'm gonna buy a paper doll that I can call my own. A doll that other fellows cannot steal. And then the flirty, flirty guys with their flirty, flirty eyes will have to flirt with dollies that are real. When I come home at night, she will be waiting. She'll be the truest doll in all this world. I'd rather have a paper doll to call my own than have a fickle-minded real-life girl.
Thank you.
Yowza. James Bostic here, Conservatives Perspective on Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it live Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Not dead air, just getting a drink. I am dry as dust, man. And we have a recorded version of the show that goes to broadcast on Sundays, Sunday afternoons, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Mojo 50 Radio, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you ought to be. The very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio that you can find out there. Mark has the night off. The little woman is up in New York, and so he and his son are batching it, and no show for him tonight. Oh, my gosh. Hold on a minute. I'm going to have to hit the mute button and sneeze. Pardon me. Or not. We have passed through in the last, well, I guess if you want to go back to the beginning of the Obama, you know, the first Obama term. We're coming up on 12 years. We're coming up on 12 years of astonishing, shocking, egregious, terrific, horrible political scandals. Scandals that should rock the citizens of this country to their absolute core. Now, a lot of people say it, and I think maybe it should be said. But boy, I tell you, you start bandying that word around, and we're not only tossing the nitroglycerin bottle back and forth, we shook it up really good before we did. But there's no other way around it. The actions of these people, okay. And what they, and every single one of them, what they had in mind was rigging this thing for Hillary Clinton. First, they rigged the DNC and the primary process with the superdelegates so that the Bernie Sanders people got screwed over and ripped off, and they gave the nomination to the world's most dislikable, unlikable, untrustworthy candidate in the history of American politics. Hillary Clinton. Hillary damn Clinton. And 63 million Americans on that Tuesday in November said no. No. Hell no. And it didn't happen. And from that point on, the Democrat Party swore a blood oath committing themselves to the destruction of Donald Trump, no matter what it took. No matter what it took. No matter what the collateral damage would be. No matter what the cost. And what's happened? Nothing. The only thing that's happened, we've gone through the impeachment. We went through the collusion thing. There's nothing there. We went through the obstruction thing. There's nothing there. We went through the Mueller report. We went through Mueller's testimony. Nothing. Nothing again. We've gone through impeachment. Nothing. And now, believe it or not, now that the president has commented on this sentencing disparity that Roger Stone is going through, and that it's a miscarriage of justice, they're already starting to talk about impeaching him over this. No, I'm not making it up. They are seriously talking about impeaching, and they will. They're not going to stop. They don't know anything else. How does it stop? Well, it could stop in November. It could. Republicans take the House. Republicans maintain control of the Senate. You know, when you drive the stake through the heart of the vampire, you don't do it with half-assed taps. You pound it. And the vampire is going to shriek, and it's going to scream, and it's going to try and claw at you, and it's going to try to get that stake out of its heart. But you don't stop. You keep pounding it through. What has to be done to the Democrat Party is really no different than what has to be done to a vampire. And in much the same way, now I am not advocating going out and impaling your local Democrat political class, but from an ideological standpoint, yeah. We're reaching a point where we just simply have to suppress these people. We have to remove them from office. And the most expedient way to do that is at the ballot box, is vote them out. And that's something that's always kind of, you know, they talk about term limits, and these guys are never going to vote term limits for themselves. There are not that many, there are not enough conscientious politicians, moral, ethical men and women in Washington to say, you know what? I'm just going to limit myself to 2 trips to the buffet, and that's it. Then I got to go. Jerry Nadler. Nancy Pelosi's been in office for 44 years. That drunken hag is going to be 80 years old soon. Schumer, 77. He's been in there for 35 years, I think. 30-some years. McConnell, probably over 30 years. Nadler, 25, 30 years. But we don't need term limits, guys. Why do we need term limits when we have elections every 2, 4, and 6 years? You can vote them out. You voted them in so that means we can consequently vote the turd monkeys out. That's all there is to it. I've never understood, I mean, an incumbency is a powerful thing. And I know a lot of those guys think of themselves, and a lot of career politicians go, you know, I just get in there. All I got to do is get in there once. You know, county commission. And then from there, maybe we go to House of Delegates. And then from the delegates to the State House. Or maybe the convention. And maybe the House of Representatives. I got enough money behind me. But once I'm in, man, I'm in. You dig? And you get name recognition and you go, oh, yeah, I voted for him 12 years ago. then, you know, they vote for you again. And then they don't really stop and think about it. And they should. You know, term limits is lazy, and these people are not going to vote themselves term limits. I guarantee you they're not going to vote themselves. So it's up to us to limit their terms, the number of terms they have, at the ballot box, and we can do that. We can do it. You voted them in. You can vote them out. And just like Wile E. Coyote, speaking of Fat Jerry the Jowl Nadler, son of a... The House Judiciary Committee, chaired by Big Jerry, is demanding testimony from U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr, and specifically identifying three issues they wish to target. And Attorney General Barr has agreed to testify to their concerns on, I'm going to read you a little bit of this. They sent a letter signed by 23 Judiciary Democrat members confirming that on March 31st, he will testify before the committee to address numerous concerns regarding his leadership of the Department of Justice and the president's improper influence over the department and our criminal justice system. We wish to be candid, the letter says, about one set of concerns we plan to address at the hearing. Since President Trump took office, we have repeatedly warned you and your predecessors that the misuse of our criminal justice system for political purposes, no, I'm not making this up, this is Democrats saying this, that misuse of our criminal justice system for political purposes is both dangerous to our democracy and unacceptable to the House Judiciary Committee. Number one. Our Republican colleagues have warned the department of the same. Number two, we have been consistent and bipartisan in this message for years. As in your tenure as Attorney General, you have engaged in a pattern of conduct in legal matters relating to the president that raises significant concerns for this committee. In the past week alone, you have taken steps that raise grave questions about your leadership of the Department of Justice. These include the ongoing developments following the removal of U.S. Attorney Jesse Liu, who oversaw the prosecution of President Trump's deputy campaign chairman, Rick Gates, the creation of a new process by which President Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, can feed the Department of Justice information through you about the president's political rivals. See how this stuff dovetails? Rudy Giuliani's never met with Attorney General Barr. The decision to overrule your career prosecutors and significantly reduce the recommended sentence for Roger Stone, who has been convicted for lying under oath at the apparent request of the president, a decision that led to all four prosecutors handling the case to withdraw from the proceedings in protest. But wait, that's not all. We have, these are not the only issues that our committee intends to discuss with you when you appear, but they are enough to require our immediate attention. We look forward to your testimony. Sincerely, love and kisses, Jerry, Bob, Carol, Ted, the gang. Now, considering the issues outlined by the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee and knowing the rabid nature of their base of resistance that demands the House Judiciary Committee do something, this is the biggest briar patch in recent congressional history. And Attorney General Barr is one big rabbit saying, don't throw me in there. Nadler says in his letter, we have repeatedly warned you and your predecessors that the misuse of our criminal justice system for political purposes is both dangerous to our democracy and unacceptable to the committee. Oh, my. They continue. In your tenure as Attorney General, you've engaged in a pattern of conduct in legal matters relating to the president that raises significant concerns for this committee. In the last week alone, you've taken steps that raise grave questions about your leadership of the Department of Justice. Oh, dear. First, the Judiciary Committee and the Lawfare staff are really clueless, especially when it comes to this thing about Jesse Liu, because he slobbered all over Jesse Liu. He couldn't praise her enough. Barr had zero conversation with President Trump about withdrawing the nomination and only gained an understanding of the Liu concerns independent from President Trump. In other words, you know, he might have been watching Lou Dobbs. Or somebody turned him onto it. Lots of people were doing this story. The Lawfare crew, which is one of the groups behind this, and we've talked about those guys, they don't have any idea what they're walking into if they start down the path of asking about why Jesse Liu was A, removed, and B, had her nomination withdrawn. For all intents and purposes, General Barr is an ally of Ms. Liu, and it only highlights the independence of his office that President Trump's action is likewise independent. So, and then they talk about the process of receiving information from Rudy Giuliani. Which Devin Nunes reminds us is a process that is extended to every citizen of the United States. If you got information about bad stuff happening, you can talk to the Attorney General. You can approach the Department of Justice. But they can't stop. They can't stop. And what they've done here is they've set up this hearing and they figure by this time Durham should be finished with his investigation. He probably won't be, but it could be. You know, these things draw out. And what they've done is, whether he's done or not, they're committed now, and the Judiciary Committee has boxed themselves into holding this hearing. Think about this for just a second. The Judiciary Committee never held a hearing about the Inspector General Horowitz FISA report because that type of hearing would have been adverse to the political interests of Democrats in the House. They don't want to hold a hearing where former administration, Department of Justice, and FBI abuses are discussed. Now, however, Attorney General Bill Barr has a hearing scheduled on the books. Now, Attorney General Bill Barr has a date on the congressional calendar that the House of Representatives cannot avoid. Now, Attorney General Bill Barr has a target date and 2 months to coordinate releasing the information gathered from within John Durham's investigation. You release the Durham investigation a week prior to March 31st, and the Judiciary Committee is trapped into holding a hearing about topics that they don't want to see made public. Yes, Chairman Jerry Nadler has just scheduled a hearing for Bill Barr. you know, it's almost too much winning. Now, if you thought it was busy, and it has been in retrospect, the last year and a half with the Mueller investigation and the release of the report, which was a nothing burger and a testimony, and then we, you know, all this stuff comes to light about Hunter Biden and Ukraine and Kazakh and China and Russia and here in the United States as well, and impeachment blows up. It's an absolute nothing. The things that are going to be revealed, and it's just prediction. It's February. So we got, let's see, we say 10 months. We've got, you know, just under 10 months. And we're going to be going to the polls for the 2020 election. We're going to have two conventions. And during all this time, all these campaigns are going to be going on. The Democrats, they don't have a winner. They can't come to a consensus. All these people are still polling low because nobody's generating any real interest. I'm still here. I'm just thinking it all over. But we're going to see more and more, and not just about, you know, Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. There's plenty of stuff out there on those guys. And profiles in corruption, guys. Pick it up. Pick it up at Amazon. Join the Audible program. Get your copy delivered. 2 days. Boom. You got it. Check it out. Bernie Sanders becomes the presumptive nominee. We got stuff on Bernie. Bernie's form of socialism and communism is do as I say, not as I do. He's tied up with the big money. Just like Buttigieg, just like every other presidential candidate. But it won't be enough. Let's say Bernie gets the nomination. Can you imagine him in a debate with Donald Trump? If that's what it comes down to, and the election is fundamentally capitalism or socialism, liberty or tyranny. I mean, and we say this every election cycle. Could be the most, and last election cycle was a pretty damned important one. And so is this one. But it may be that we're moving into a state to where every election cycle is important, and we're having, you know, we're going to have to pay particular attention to who we put in office. We always, you know, we should always anyway, but the American electorate's a pretty lazy one. And that's why incumbents have it made. Takes all the guesswork, takes all the thinking out of it. Well, our not thinking days are over. We're in it now, up to our necks. And we're gonna have to bear down on it, and we're gonna have to do the right thing. We're gonna have to do the right thing from here on out, like we always should have been doing. You're listening to A Conservative's Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network, and we do this live. Twice a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have a recorded version of the show that goes out Sunday afternoons, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, Mojo 50 Radio. If you're not listening, you should be. The very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there. I'm pretty much done. We're going to go ahead and call it a night. Thank you guys very much for listening. We appreciate it tremendously. Again, Tuesdays and Thursdays here live at 7 p.m. Recorded version of the show. Oh, next week, Michael Cutler, Tuesday. Big guest, Michael Cutler. And if you didn't hear Tuesday's show from earlier in the week, dig that one up. That was with John Guandolo. And John Guandolo is president of understandingthethreat.com. He is an expert in global jihad, counterterrorism. He was on the show. We spent a great 45 minutes talking about jihad and how it's infiltrating this country. And you need to check that out. So you can grab that up on the archive page from Tuesday and give that a listen to if you didn't already. Next Tuesday, Michael Cutler, federal agent for 30 years with the Immigration Service, specialized with drug enforcement issues, immigration, counterterrorism, organized crime, testified before the 9/11 Commission. Another one of those guys that is on the beam and knows his business, and ACP is honored to have him join us this coming Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's all we're going to do for tonight. Thanks, you guys, for hanging out and listening. Appreciate it, as always. And come next Tuesday, we will be back, Lord willing, in River Don't Rise with Michael Cutler, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.